Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ann Ortley's Weekly Weather Show. My name is Ann Ortley, and I'm an astrologer on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And I'm sitting here on a beautiful Sunday night at my bright red desk, waiting for the show to start and thinking, listening to a dog howl outside and kind of enjoying the turn into fall. What we do every week here at the Weekly Weather is we talk about the weather in the heavens above, the cosmological weather, the planets, what they're doing. And then we look to see the correlations that they cause down here on Earth. So one of the things that we know as astrologers or people who love to study the heavens is as above, so below, as without, so within. And so tonight's journey will take us on the journey for the week ahead of October 4th through the 10th, which is the next week we're in, the week of fall for the Northern Hemisphere, and one of the first weeks of spring for the Southern Hemisphere. Because remember, the sun has now gone below the equator, and the Southern Hemisphere is starting to warm, and every day their days are a little longer. While on the Northern Hemisphere, it's starting to cool, and every day our days are a little shorter, and the minutes of the night grow. So today is a lovely day in Libra, and we have many, many planets in the sign of Libra, and we also have planets answering, because when they're in the sign of Libra, they then answer to the sign of Venus. And Venus is in Scorpio. Now, we've been talking about how there's 100 days of Scorpio passion, as Venus is going to be in Scorpio for 100 days, 63 days of Venus in Scorpio. Then she has 22 days in Libra. Just a little break there. She goes back into Libra and goes, ha, ha, ha. You know, kind of like out of the boxing ring, over to the corner. Guy throws a bucket of water on her, wipes her down, says, you're doing good, kid. You're doing good. And then she has 37 days when she gets out of Libra into Sagittarius. So we're not going to have Venus in Sagittarius until January, okay? So we're really feeling all this Scorpio passion. Now, well, the other thing that's happening is there is no fire in the sky, right? All these planets are in water and air and some earth, but there is nothing in fire, nothing, nothing, nothing. So all the fire people and all your fire planets in your own chart are feeling a little bereft because there's nothing for them to hang out with because all the fire planets have gone away and left the heavens. So the fire people, the Aries, the Leos, and the Sagittarius are having a little bit of a harder time with this energy. And your fire planets are, if you have a certain planet like your moon or something like that in a fire sign, there's nothing for it to play with. It can play with air, which is all right, but the air is in the water, so it's wet air and it dampens the fire. Can't play with water because water puts fire out, and earth just kind of lies there like a log. So the fire planets are really very unhappy. So what can you do? You light some candles. You literally get some more fire in your life. I had two people call me and they go, I started smoking again. What's this about? There's no fire in the sky. You don't have to smoke, but light the match. Light the candle. Light the flame. Wear red clothes. Eat spicy foods. You've been finding you've been wanting a little spicy foods lately, huh? That's the fire. It's about understanding that we're missing that elemental energy. And so when we miss that energy in the sky, we compensate for it in our own world or in our own lives or here on Earth. So we've had a lot of water. So New York has been underwater for the last couple of weeks. Last week or so, California, which is a desert, has had almost too much fire because there's been nothing to temper the missing energy. You know, it's just like over-the-top fire, so it's been way, way hot in San Francisco or in L.A. It's understanding, excuse me, I'm a little sleepy here. It's understanding when an element goes missing that we really want to compensate for it. So I have two lovely friends, Jane and Raymond. Raymond has no water. Jane has no air. Raymond is a stellium in Libra and Aquarius. Jane is Pisces, Pisces, Pisces. So they've been married 40-some-odd years, met, knew within 3 months that it was time to get married, and their missing elements complement each other. He has no water. She has no air. They kind of relate together well as a team because that energy is compensated for by partner. In our case, where there is no fire in the sky, and the fire people are all feeling like they want to crawl into their bed and pull the covers over their heads, or they're bursting into tears, or they're kind of feeling soggy and sad and whatever, just not feeling quite up to it, you know? That the fire people who light up our lives, they're not around or they're depressed. So the rest of us are like, you're not around. You're making me feel, I'm depressed. I haven't seen you. There's been no light. There's been no flare. And or the fire people have been having really big emotional times. And normally they just blaze right through it, blaze, fire word. But now, right now, they're feeling like they want to crawl in their bed and cry. Okay, and it's all of us, you know, with the missing energy of fire. If you're feeling like you're a little overwhelmed, you know, light a candle and gaze at it for a while and feel the fire, or light your room up. Make sure you're sitting in bright lights. Remember, the sun is going away. It's getting darker out there. It's overcast on the Upper East Side. It's been overcast the last week or so. It's been very rainy and gray. And so people have been like very rainy and gray. Well, yeah. Well, what do we do to banish the gray and rainy? We eat carbohydrates. Well, that's always a solution. Burn up the fire in our bodies, or we light some candles. We don't curse the darkness. We say, ah, the darkness is here. Now, Venus in Scorpio, least favorite place for Venus, because she's very, very passionate. But she's also a little dark. So there's also been a lot of passionate, dark stuff going on. Think about, like, how irritated, or just irritated is maybe the wrong word, how you've been kind of like, they're not going to manipulate me anymore, or maybe how you've wanted to manipulate people, because you can, because Venus is in Scorpio, wanting to just kind of turn it a little, or twist it a little, or shift it a little, because Venus in Scorpio has that passion energy, has that desire to kind of conquer, right? And so we have to give her due. We also have to give her a little space to maneuver, because she is, you know, kind of emerging from the swamps, trailing all sorts of seaweed and things like that. But she also is a very passionate placement, and it is our deepest, darkest secrets. So this is also a time when the secrets come out. Scorpio reveals the secrets. Now, more so later this week, because Venus is stopping this week. All right, so no fire, none in the sky, none for a while. We have to wait till Mercury gets into fire in a couple of months, couple of weeks, or Mars gets into fire in a couple of weeks. But right now, Venus is going to stop this week. She pauses. She says, oh, I forgot something. And she's going to go back to the beginning of September, back to when Mercury was retrograde, back to when she entered her shadow at 27 Libra. Now, 27 Libra is a significant point because back in 1982, Saturn and Pluto joined at 27 Libra, and that started a whole new adventure for them around restructuring the world, reality, your world, our world, the other world. And so Venus is going back to station on that point. So she's going back to the fall of 82, and she's going to say, do you remember what was going on in the fall of 82? You're somehow working with that story, right? So for me, that's when my mom died. Got diagnosed with cancer kind of unexpectedly. Not that she didn't have symptoms for a long time, but she was ignoring them because she was Irish Catholic and she thought if she ignored them, they'd go away. Just don't pay attention and it won't really happen. How long have we been living with that story? So anyway, she got diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, my father, who was a physician, said to all of us, it didn't spread to the liver after her surgery. Now, I, of course, am a programmer. At the point, I was a computer programmer. Didn't spread to the liver. Negative phrasing. What did it spread to? Right? The different parts of her body that were taken out. You know, she had a kidney removed. She had part of her uterus removed. She had ovarian, you know, ovaries removed. I'm like, they took a heck of a lot out if it didn't spread to the liver, i.e. it spread to these other parts. Everybody else in my family, because my dad was the doctor, you know, you didn't question Dr. Dad or Dr. Mark in the case of my, you know, my uncle and my aunt, her sister and brother, heard it didn't spread. That's what they heard. They didn't hear it didn't spread to the liver. They heard it didn't spread. Because for him, as my dad, he was thinking liver spreads, die quick. Not spread to liver lives longer. You know, we can fight this thing. So it was, for me, that story is kind of running. you know, because I've had a couple friends lose their mother kind of suddenly. I had a couple people write with very sad stories. I had a couple people get diagnosed with, you know, pretty severe illnesses. And I've kind of been thinking about that story again, you know, because it's up. And when you're going through the journey with people who are losing people or who are facing the possible loss of people, you realize how precious life is, Venus in Scorpio. Because Venus in Scorpio is the time when the growing season stops. It's when the frost happens. It's when the plants say, hasta la vista, catch you next year. It's when the impatiens have a frost and every one of them tips over dead in the little parks along the way, you know, in the little gardens along the way to my grocery store. It's the time of endings. So Venus in Scorpio stopping this week, stationing in the sky at 12, evoking, and saying to you, remember how fast time passes. Understand that time is leaving. Time is fleeting. We don't know how much time we have, but we know we need to make sure that we use our time well. When Venus stops, or when any planet stops, what it does is it calls attention to the essential nature of the planet. So Scorpio, the essential nature is death and rebirth, regeneration, reconnection, and certainly loss. Because the egg and the sperm, happy little egg, happy little sperm, they die to make the geoblast that keeps multiplying and turns into a fetus and into a baby. They both have to die and be transformed. That's part of Scorpio's job. It says, come with me, I will transform you. And you go, I don't know that I want to get transformed. And Scorpio says, oh, it won't hurt. And you go, I think it's going to hurt. Please don't hurt me. And the salad and the lettuce and the tomato and the cucumber, they all get chopped up. They can't go back to being a solid little tomato. Their day on the vine is done. They have been turned into a gustatory device, and they are now tossed with some romaine and a little bit of cucumber and some Caesar dressing, and that's it. Their life is over. Voila, they've been transformed into a salad. The whole part with Scorpio is you can't go back. It's a permanent transformation. We'd like to think it's possible, but it's not. We make permanent decisions under the sign of Scorpio. We make permanent transformations. We say we are finished. We say we are done. Now, the interesting part of Venus in Scorpio, when she goes retrograde, she says, maybe not so permanent. Maybe we shouldn't think of it as really being over. Maybe we should come up with a new way of seeing it. And so the mythology for Venus in Scorpio is the myth of Inanna. And she descended into the underworld to visit her sister and descended. And she said, I'm going down to visit my sister. Okay? And I'm going to read you, because I think we need to have a little story on Venus and Scorpio night. I'm going to read you from Myth Astrology by Raven Caldera, which is an excellent book. And what he did was he sat and came up with all the different mythologies for each planet and sign. And for Inanna, which is Venus in Scorpio, he came up with Inanna. She was the Sumerian queen of the heaven. She was the goddess of the morning and the evening star. And she was the lady of the storehouse, the queen of fertility and war, the goddess of love. Although Ishtar and Inanna are considered to be culturally variant versions of the same goddess, I've chosen to separate them in this book. And Inanna represents the scorpionic traits of the twin goddess's nature. The central story of Inanna's myth is her journey down to and back from the underworld, and is the Venus in Scorpio story because Venus in Scorpio is never satisfied with anything but the deepest experience. Scorpio is well known as the paranoid sign, always looking under things for the hidden agendas, secret resentments, and dangerous manipulations she is certain she will find. Part of this certainty, this compulsion, is Scorpio's karmic assignment to seek the depths whatever the cost. Nothing shallow or surface level contents her. She must find the deeper meaning, the bare bones of truth hidden under the emotional layers, or stagnate into depression. A Venus in Libra seeks harmony, but a Venus in Scorpio wants to overturn the apple cart and look for the wormy, rotten one. She does not expect to find a golden one because she's very sensitive and easily hurt and disappointed. So it is always a surprise to her when one appears. In love, the success of this kind of seeking depends a great deal on the cooperation of one's partner. If they are dishonest, she will find out and go into paroxysms of rage. If they cannot stand up to her and meet her fears straightforwardly, she will suspect them of all sorts of unfounded sins and either make accusations or build up resentments that leak out into other areas. If they are emotionally reserved, she will fling herself against their wall until she is let in or permanently rebuffed, because what she wants is the deep bonding experience, and the only way she knows how to seek it is to probe and keep probing until some half-wished-for door opens. A Venus in Scorpio, when all is said and done, wants to bond on the soul level, to become not only one flesh, but one soul. In the myth of Iana, the Queen of Heaven, hears that her sister, Eresh-Kigal, the goddess of the dead, has lost her husband. She hears Eresh-Kigal through the ground weeping and decides to visit her, leaving her lover, Dumuzi, in charge. She sets Dumuzi's sister, Ninshubur, at the gate of the underworld with the orders to go for help if she doesn't return in 3 days. Now remember the three-day business. This was the Nile, this was the star, this is the Jesus resurrection. 3 days is a big deal. It's also the summer solstice and the winter solstice. So when the planets stop and descend into the underworld, we go, 3 days, make sure if they're not back in 3 days, go get somebody. So Inanna said to her sister-in-law, if I'm not back, make sure to go get somebody. All right. So she's greeted. She starts to descend. She's greeted by seven gates, seven planets, each of whom, it's my little astrological aside. She descends. She's greeted by seven gates, each of whom has a guardian, and they require her to be stripped of all her jewels and garments before she can enter the realm of Eresh-Kigal. This is part of a Venus in Scorpio's path. Although she would like to strip away all the illusions and defenses of others, as a fixed sign, she often finds it hard to give up her own. Part of learning to trust and truly going into the depths with someone else means that you both have to get naked. One person doesn't get to be clothed and look down on the other partner's vulnerability. That's not a relationship. That's a lab rat under a microscope. Raven's very funny. However, fate usually intervenes and forces the stripping down into Venus and Scorpio sooner or later, ready or not. Inanna comes before Eresh-Kigal naked, and Eresh-Kigal scorns her, openly jealous that Inanna has a spouse while she, her bereaved sister, does not. There is some question about Inanna's motivations in coming down to see Eresh-Kigal, comfort, catharsis, or gloating. This, too, is not inappropriate. A Venus in Scorpio often deals with many layers of motivations that must be sifted through, and she rarely shows all her reasons up front. Piercing Inanna with the eye of death, Eresh-Kigal paralyzes her and hangs her on the wall above her throne from several meat hooks. There Inanna reaches the point that has been called the katabasis, the bottom of the pit, the point from which there can only be a rebirth. She will not come out of this ordeal unchanged, and neither will her marriage. In a sense, part of having Venus in Scorpio is the consistent urge to go down to the bottom of the pit and back up again over and over until it's a familiar place that has no power over you. This is part of the Scorpio process, and it may involve facing bad patterns inherited from childhood that are played out over and over in a relationship, until the tape finally snaps and ceases to run. This kind of relationship as depth therapy requires a partner and patience and a committed energy that is willing to take the underworld journeys with a Venus in Scorpio and who has the backbone and honesty to appreciate the process. Meanwhile, back up on Earth, Ninjabar waits 3 days and then runs back to the gods, telling them that Inanna has been captured. They know that Erish Kegel is unlikely to hear an appeal from any of them, so they cleverly create 2 messengers who are neither wholly male nor female and send them down to see her. Seeing the sad Erish Kegel, they are weep for her and give her their sympathy, and she is so moved by them that she allows Inanna to go free on one condition. Everyone she meets must be glad to see her come back, and the first person who's not glad to see her must take her place. At this point, it becomes obvious that Erish Kegel knows something that Inanna has not yet faced. Raven's really good. All right, so Inanna emerges from the underworld, renewed and triumphant, back from the dead, and escorted by a cloud of chittering underworld demons. Ninshubur runs ahead of her, warning everyone to act as if they're glad to see her. But she does not reach Inanna's palace before the Queen of Heaven and her demon entourage. There, disaster awaits. As soon as it becomes clear that Inanna was trapped in the underworld and unlikely to return, Dumuzi had set himself up to rule in her place. He was so busy glorying in his new position that he had not bothered to take part in the rescue effort, and thus did not know about her return. When she barges through the door, he's taken aback and unable to hide his disappointment. The demons leap upon him and carry him off to Erish Kegel, who now has managed to turn the tables on her sister yet again. At this point, the worst has happened. Inanna has been stripped of the last of her illusions, that Dumuzi is all devoted, and that there is no resentment on his part about being her subject and consort. She's furious. She also still loves him, and she wants him back. This state of affairs is not unusual for Venus and Scorpio. Now, I can tell you from personal experience this is true. Having seen the dark places within herself, she is more able to accept imperfection in others. Love and hate are inextricably linked for her, and she moves back and forth between them more freely than other signs. It is the intensity of her feelings for someone that is important for her. For her, love is not the opposite of hate, nor vice versa, but both are the opposite of indifference. Ninshubur unselfishly offers to take Dumuzi's place for half the year, so Inanna shares him with her sister from then on. This can symbolize a Venus and Scorpio's longing to be with a partner who will accept both the light and dark within her, who will marry all of her, including the less socially acceptable parts. It also illustrates how the chronic trips to the underworld that a Venus in Scorpio is driven to take can shake up the hidden anger and resentments in a relationship, allowing a chance for a new rebirth to a higher level of honesty. For this is the sign of transformation in relationship, and all who venture near had best hang on for the ride. So that is Raven Caldera from Myth Astrology, Exploring Planets and Pantheons. It is a fabulous book. If you don't have it, get it. It's one of those, you read it and you go, I understand the mythological implications of that sign. So Venus in Scorpio is taking us this week on this journey. She's retrograding, and she's going back into the underworld to get her husband. So what we can expect this week is a big revelation, or a series of revelations, as the case may be, about love, relationship, the Scorpio part of your chart, the Libra part of your chart, because Venus rules Libra, the Taurus part of your chart, because Venus rules Taurus. And as she stops, expect for those sections of your chart to kind of vibrate and sing and go, and make sure to pay attention, because you're going to see patterns in relationships that are part and parcel of your need to change and to shift things and to help you understand the patterns in the relationships. You're going to see the darker sides. Unfortunately, Venus in Scorpio is a dark energy. You know, so this week we had that young man who was taped by his roommate in college having sex, who killed himself. Because it was broadcast on the internet. And it brought up for me, you know, again, I've been having a lot of memory, down memory lane. When I was in college, there was a woman in my college who got taped by audio, no visual. We didn't have internet. I'm old. But she got taped, and it was played for the guys in the dorm, the boys' dorm, the men's dorm. And it was very traumatic. And I had friends who were involved in it, and I was livid because, you know, I was a little feminist. And they were like, ah, you know, get over it. It's just sex. I'm like, but you violated that woman's privacy. And I actually lost a couple friends. I had one good friend, Tom Tedesco, and we never spoke again because we got into such a big fight over whether Queenie was right in taping this woman. And the guy's name was Queenie, so that tells you a little bit about him, too. At any rate, he was so mad, and I was just like, it's such a violation. You know, she didn't know. She wouldn't have consented to that. He's like, well, you know, she was up there. It's like, it doesn't matter. It wasn't consensual. And understanding Venus in Scorpio helps us see the darker side of human nature, where we maybe do something that we didn't really mean to have happen, but it has unintended consequences because it is Scorpio, and that Scorpio has a little tail on it. So we want to watch that energy this week because it's very, very strong and because Venus is stationing. We also have a new moon this week, so the moon is dark. Now, when the moon is dark, we see all sorts of things. Okay, because it's a dark moon, the goblins and the gooms and the grooms are out. So there's a new moon on Thursday as Venus stations. And then there is, and the new moon's in Libra as Venus stops. So this is a big old day. And also Venus is stationing, or the new moon rather, I'm sorry, is on Saturn, the U.S. Saturn. So we can expect pretty emotional activity in the heavens above us around financial matters this week because the new moon is on the U.S. Saturn and Venus is stationing on it and Saturn is approaching it. We're about to have our Saturn return as a country. Now, you guys all remember when you were 29, if you were 29, you had your Saturn return. That was your first one. Then when you were 58, if you're that old, you had your second one. Well, we're having our eighth as a country. But eighth is also about manifestation. And so as Saturn approaches the Saturn for the U.S., the new moon here is going to help us see our structures in a different way, see our authorities in a different way. And then the next day, Venus stations and Mercury joins with Saturn. So it's a very serious week. We can expect very serious information. We can expect very serious news. We are going to hear things or find out things that will change the way we see things forever. And that is what should happen when Venus stops in the dark sign of Scorpio at the very beginning of a dark new moon. Because remember, when it's a new moon, there is no light in the sky yet. The crescent moon is 45 degrees away. Not even that little sliver. Ain't nothing up there except Venus sitting right next to the moon, making it very emotional. So we've got a highly emotional week. We also have the Draconides meteorites, so watch for them. Draconids, some people say Draconids. Draconids, some people say Draconids, you know, it's whatever. Draco, D-R-A-C-O-N-I-D-S, meteors flying around in the heavens. And we also on Tuesday have Mercury square Pluto. And Mercury, remember, Mercury now is into a new sign. He went into Libra, so last week he opposed Uranus and Jupiter, so we helped to see things on Friday and Saturday. And then he squares Pluto, and then he joins with Saturn because he's going through the T-square in Libra. So we can expect interesting and unusual news. The other thing we have happen, because Mercury is in Libra now, is we have a few exciting energies around directional stuff. Besides Venus stationing, we also have Cronos stationing at 6 degrees of Cancer. Now, Cronos is a trans-Neptunian or a Uranian point, which is basically the astrologers waiting for them to be discovered. But Cronos stations on the 6th, the new moon is on the 7th, and Venus is on the 8th. So the back end of the week has got a lot of emotional energy. And remember, there is no fire in the sky. So people are going to be feeling highly, highly emotional. We also have a couple of planets changing signs. We have, asteroids changing signs. Vesta goes into water. Pallas Athena goes into fire. She goes into Sag. Ceres goes into Capricorn. Okay, so the asteroids are changing signs and saying, okay, we're shifting a little bit. So there will be one asteroid in the heavens, Pallas Athena, to light the way and help us see our patterns. But the rest, all air and water and a little bit of earth, lots and lots of talking and feeling, emotional processing. Give yourself over to it. Let the darkness come up and look at it from the point of view of, wow, that's pretty cool. I wonder what that means. You know, holy cow, what did I just learn? It's emotional. It's deep. It's interior. It needs to come out. So give it permission. Give it a voice. Give it a name. Let it talk to you. Now the nodes are traveling along, doop 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 doop, and the energy of the new moon is pretty profound. It's a pretty decent new moon, especially because it is squaring. It's conjunct the Saturn in the chart. The other thing is the Vinda Matrix, which is a fixed star, it's triggered this week by Saturn. So we're going to hear some widows, for lack of a better word. Vinda Matrix, as it was originally called, Vinda Meteor, the gatherer of grapes, represents the son of a Saturn nymph to whom Bacchus, in a token of his fondness, gave a vine planted at the foot of the elm. While gathering grapes, he fell and broke his neck, whereupon Bacchus placed him in the stars as a memorial of his former affection. So Vinda Matrix is worry and depression, unpopular, failure in business, harassed by creditors. Worry, disappointments, lost through law or writings. Theft, bad health, failure in business, lost through writing and business. Trouble through love affairs. So get ready. It's going to be a fun week. And with that in mind, let's take some calls from our listeners, if anybody's out there. And if nobody's out there, then we'll go home. All right, there's somebody out there. Always good. 347-215-7467. Repeat, 347-215-7467. Hi, 530. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What's new and exciting?
I wanted to ask you what my chart tells you about money.
Okay. What's your birthday?
1/21/56. 7:45 p.m. Glendale, Los Angeles County.
As opposed to Humboldt. Okay. All right, so January 1956, 7:45 in the evening in Glendale. And money. Okay. Do you still live in Glendale?
No, I live in Lake Tahoe.
Okay, not too far. Not a huge difference. I just wanted, you know, if you moved across the country or something, we would go, okay. So money, from your chart's perspective. Ruler of the second house is traditionally the sign of money, and it's co-ruled by Virgo. Get Virgo on the cusp of the house, and then a little smidgy in there, we got Venus, Libra ruling it. Your Venus is exalted in the sign of Pisces, and it's in the seventh house, the sign she likes to be in. However, that's in the house of other people. So it can be very easy for you to spend your money on other people rather than yourself, and it can be a little difficult for you to actually ask for what you're worth. Mercury, the ruler of your second house, is in Aquarius retrograde. So again, sixth houses, I can be a little servant-oriented, and retrograde, I have a little trouble speaking. So we've got nice rulers. We like Mercury in Aquarius. It's smart, smart, smart. And we like Venus in Pisces. It's really gifted. But the question would be, how do you ask for money? Or do you ask for money? And then we say, oh, look at Venus is squared by Saturn. So when she was four, Mom said, money's tight. And when she was five, Mom said, don't spend that money. Money doesn't grow on trees. So that creates in your chart a little bit of anxiety around money and love, too, because Venus rules money and love. But the Venus herself is lovely place. So I would say to you, what have you done about those old voices around money and love? Because that's the solution to the story. Have you learned to ask for what your worth or your value is? And the next part would be the money from your career. Venus rules the 11th house is the money from the career, because the 10th house is the career. The moon rules the 11th. And it's exalted in Taurus, and it's in Sagittarius on the part of fortune. But again, Do they keep the money or do you get to keep it? And then the sun rules, co-rules that money from other people, and that's in the fifth house of creativity on the edge of the sixth. So again, how do you ask for your value and your worth? And that would be the question. You know, where are you in that process? And right now, as the transit's going, Saturn's going through the second house, so he's bringing up the story from 1980 to 1982, which is when you got clear about money the first time. And now he's saying to you, okay, 30 years later, what have you learned? And you have to kind of talk to him and say, what have you learned? So what have you learned about money in the last 30 years? And how good are you at asking for what you're worth?
Gosh, you're good.
No, astrology is good.
Gosh, I love astrology.
I love astrology.
As a good astrologer.
Right, huh? Yeah. So what's the five? What happened when you were five around money? Because that's the fear. That's the fear place.
When I was five, my mother remarried my stepfather.
Uh-huh.
My father abandoned us when I was 18 months old.
Okay.
She was always complaining about money.
Yep.
Even as a grown-up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would spend money on my kids, at, I have two sons, at Christmas, she, you know, all these things came up for me the minute you spoke those words.
Yep.
She would, you know, I'd hear her sniping two other people behind my back about what I spent on other people.
On the people you loved.
people
With that lovely Taurus moon of yours that was like, I love these kids. This is what my, I am a mother, a moon in Taurus. And moon in Taurus on the part of fortune. I will share my fortune with my children. I love my children, totally.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Mom, what's your relationship with her now? She was very restrictive around money. And she was really not raised necessarily with a kind dad. She's got major father story with her chart.
Right.
So, what, you know, did she ever come to resolve her money stuff, or did you?
No, she still does not.
And she's still alive. She's still with us.
She is.
Okay. So she never worked it out.
Nope.
And what have you done around money?
I've just worked too hard and not asked for what I'm worth.
Okay. So you see where it comes from, right?
Yes, I do.
Now you got Saturn going through that house, that second house, and he's saying to you, I can give you a lot of money. I can. You got to ask for it, though. And you have Saturn square Venus, which says other people can ask for it. So you have to maybe get an agent or summon up that other person, that you know, the inside and go, okay, the part of me that is brave and bold, that can ask for money for other people, because you can ask for money for other people, right?
Yeah.
When you talk to your friends and you're like, well, you deserve more than that. Go give it to them. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can ask for money for your kids.
Yep.
Right? So you
My ex-husband, yep.
You know you can do it. It's all in there. It's just it's hard to do it for yourself.
I'm worth it.
Yeah. Well, Saturn going through the second house really wants you to really focus on that gift of what's of value to you. And you're very smart with Mercury retrograde. When you were 12 and a quarter, did you start earning your first money?
Probably babysitting, yeah.
Babysitting. And did you have to share it with her or give her some?
I don't remember what I even spent my money on back in those days, so she probably took it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I would check. I mean, I would kind of go back and do, like, what happened when I used to babysit when I was 12 and a quarter? Because that's the other part of the story, because Mercury is in Aquarius. It's like, I'm good at this stuff. And what you want to maybe do is when people ask you if you can do something, say to them, well, what do you think I should charge for this? Or ask your friends, and then gulp and swallow and say it. Because you do have Jupiter-Pluto conjunct, which is big money. But it's in the 12th house of undoing. So you feel also a little bit maybe you could be undone by too much money, that it's too much of a responsibility, that there's a cost associated with it. And that also you need to look at, because part of the ambivalence about making a lot of money is if I have to make a lot, then I have to do stuff with it. And that makes you maybe feel a little anxious about what will happen to me. You know, so that's another sub-piece. But I think the bigger part is the mom picking on you. But Venus in Pisces can make money. Mercury in Aquarius is very, very smart. It's in Virgo's house, happy by placement. So your chart can make money definitely through any kind of service. And right now with Saturn in there, it's time to go back through the 30-year lessons, thinking in 7-year increments. So 82, 89, 96, 2007 and 2003 now. What happened? And then if you want, go even back another seven-year increments of when, from 1982 back, because that was when you learned your value, or you were told your value. Make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. But I don't think you have a problem with it in the sense of this chart can always make money. And you do have an exalted moon in Taurus, so, and that rules the midheavens. That co-rules the midheaven and co-rules the money from other people. So I think it's more an issue of asking. And in about 3 months ago, you had a new moon. You know, your progressed new moon came to your natal moon. So 3 months ago, there was a part of you that said, you know, I think I need to revisit my vision on money.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 months ago, you actually started a new money cycle because your progressed moon came to your Venus. So what happened? Did you get a new job in January last year?
No, I started thinking about how I was going to make money and just was overcome with fear.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Okay. Well, you know, your Saturn rules your fifth house. So the way you spent it on your children is the way you can make it. Okay? Like understanding that placement, and you actually can make money from your creativity. So I would say to you, writing, communication, something that you physically create, any of those things can make you money. And your progressed ascendant goes into Scorpio in about a year and a half, and that often is a real change in our understanding of money. So there's a book I like by Sheinfeld, I think his name is, Sheinfeld or Sheinberg, called Chasing the Money, Breaking Free of the Money Game. And it's about understanding money as an energy system. And it's a system of valuing and exchanging. And you do have a Venus-Saturn aspect, so you do value things well, maybe a little harshly. So it's, you know, go back and look at all the beliefs you have about money, because it's a good time to do it. Especially when people are going, oh, there's not enough money. It's like, go and say, okay,
right.
What does money look like? What is it? It's green paper. Come on. With little old dead guys on it, you know. But at the same time, we give it enormous value.
And power.
And power, right? And you've got Venus in the seventh that says, I get a little nervous when I embrace my power. So you have to kind of feel the fear. When you feel the fear, go, oh, wow, I'm feeling fearful. That's a good sign. That's my inner mother coming up for me to talk to her, and I'll be much nicer to her than my mom was to me, and I'm not going to take shots at her and snipe her. I'm going to ask her what she really wants, and then I'm going to figure out how to get it for her, and that can help an enormous amount. You don't have any afflictions in the sense of it's not a chart that's destined to be poor. Some people sign up for a life of poverty. You signed up for a life of ambivalence about it, so I would give yourself permission to kind of shake that up and change it. Especially with Uranus coming to station on your progressed sun, you can really shift this.
And my lunar return this month, I have my vertex on the fixed star Spica.
Oh.
And I look at that and go, oh, this is beautiful. See, I can have it. I can do it.
Mm-hmm. It's like, let's get the visioning in. Yeah. I mean, it's a construct. It's a lovely construct, but it also is, what, you know, what's the belief system about? And the whole thing with Venus-Saturn is it's very early parental training, you know, and for you it was 0 to 5. So it wasn't like, you know, when you're little and those are the gods that tell us what to do, we have a little trouble kind of, you know, arguing with them because they're in charge.
Right.
But now we're all grown up, so it's also going back and looking at those older stories and understanding the source of them and then reframing it. So think of the things she used to say. It's easier for a rich man to get into heaven, you know, it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven for a camel to go through an eye of a needle. You go, okay, rich women can get into heaven. Like, come up with new stories for yourself that you can say to yourself when you're feeling nervous.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes, it does.
Cool. Keep me posted. I expect to hear about a lot of money in your future.
Thank you. I'll be calling you for a reading.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Wonderful.
Thanks. I love astrology. Bye.
I do too. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, 517. How are you?
Hi, Ann. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. I am Scorpio, and I was wondering, with all this energy going on in the Scorpio house, is it a negative effect for me or a positive effect for me?
It's Venus, right? So Venus can be both.
Okay.
So what Venus is doing, Venus and Mars are both in that house, And so as they go rolling through Scorpio's house, what they're doing is they're going to trigger all the planets. Now, Venus only gets as high as 13, and then she goes backwards. So she's stopping in the next couple days. Mars is continuing, so he's going to go through and trigger everybody by the time he gets out of there. So he's waking everybody up, and he leaves Scorpio on October 28th. So he's activating everything and starting a new two-year cycle around every planet in your Scorpio, every Scorpio planet you have. You know, if you have a sun, he starts a new two-year cycle around how he goes and gets things for your sun. If you have a moon, he starts a new two-year cycle about how you relate emotionally. If you have Saturn, he starts a two-year cycle around your structures. So he's like, yeah, let's start the new two-year cycle. Venus gets as high as 13, and then she's going back to 27, Libra, and then she's coming back through again, and then she gets through everybody by the end of middle of January, January 7th or whatever it is. She goes into Sag. So she does the same thing. And whenever a planet comes to touch an existing planet, it starts a new cycle, and the Venus cycle is a year. So what you want to do is look and say, okay, what did, when Mars came to my sun, because you just said you're a Scorpio, whatever degree your sun was, that day that Mars came to that degree, you started a new two-year cycle then, and kind of look around the 2 years of how you show your ego. When Venus gets there, it's a two-year cycle around how you express your desire nature, how your purpose and your reason for living expresses your desire nature. So it's a very big time because you've got two major personal planets, your desire and your ability to get stuff, starting new two-year cycles on all your Scorpio planets.
Right.
So this is a big fall for you in terms of vision, dream, where you're going. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Perfect.
Yeah. Cool. So, and anybody listening, whatever Scorpio planet you have, new two-year cycles starting around it. You're learning how to set that cycle up. So I have Saturn in Scorpio. So Mars came to there when it was at 6, and it said, okay. Now Venus is going to come back over it two more times, but the Mars-Saturn, which is how do I build my structures, how do I take action, which in my case was redoing my website, which I should have waited till Venus went direct, but regardless. It was like, okay, let me rebuild my structures that support me in my business, Saturn, right, or in my work, Saturn. Mm-hmm. So for each of us, whatever that is, it's a two-year cycle, and then you can kind of mark it. And if you've got a software program, you can actually do a return for when Mars comes to, or whatever planet, Mars or Venus, comes to your Scorpio planets and cast a chart for that and see what the purpose of that planet is with Mars or Venus for the next 2 years or 1 year. It's a great, we love these conjunctions because they start new things for us.
All right.
At the same time, we're all getting clear on our patterns and our relationship issues. Yeah, which is always fun. So.
Yes, we need that.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like, I don't know that I really want to get clear on that, but all right, if you're going to make me, I will. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Right.
Make it a positive thing, not a negative thing.
Right. Make it a positive. New vision. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So good. So
all
take care. Bye. All right. 973, how are you?
Doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. You got a question?
Yes, it's a location question.
Uh-huh.
I'm living somewhere I just moved to, and mm-hmm. Thinking about relocating for a position in another country.
Okay.
What's your birth? February 6th, 1973.
And time?
9:32 p.m.
Location?
New Brunswick, New Jersey.
And where are you living now?
Sparta, New Jersey.
Oh, okay, not too far. And where are you thinking of moving?
Santiago, Chile.
Santiago, Chile, okay. So let's look at your astrocartography. So there's a kind of thing called astrocartography that lets us find where you want to live in the world. So let's go to South America. And Santiago, Chile. Okay.
And it wouldn't be until February of next year.
Oh, it's a year out?
No, it's about 5 months out, but it
would be February, like 2011. Got it. Okay.
Right.
When you move there, you're moving on your Pluto line, okay? It's a little north of your Pluto line, and it also is your ascendant Uranus line. So I'm not not against it, but I would try visiting there before you moved, because those are hard planets, meaning you might like it. You might also get there and go, wow, this is really not fun. So I would do a vacation before I actually relocated, because those are difficult lines. They're not bad lines if you like them. So let's see if your planet, your chart likes them. So Uranus is in your first retrograde in Libra, squares Jupiter. Not Uranus is nicely placed, so that's fine. And Pluto is angular. So Pluto in Libra. Would it be a is there a relationship involved in this move?
No.
No? Okay. Just a call to move to Santiago, Chile?
A job, yeah.
Well, I would go check it out. I would go down and see how you feel about the environment, because what you may find when you get there, you do have Saturn in the ninth house in your natal chart, which says, I find my work overseas, or I can work overseas. But Saturn in the ninth is also of two minds about the work, because it's Gemini. So Gemini goes, well, no, all right, no, yes, maybe. And so it kind of goes back and forth. So it's not a chart that says, gee, I really want to live overseas. However, you do have Uranus on your moon, right, in this time frame we're looking at, Jupiter and Uranus are both going to be on your moon in Aries, saying I'm ready to start a new adventure. They're both opposite your Pluto. And, I would check out the environment, because when you're on the Pluto-Uranus line, those are tough lines to live on, in the sense of, you know, but you natally have them angular. So you may find you like that energy. You know, it may be just an intensification of your natal chart that you kind of feel comfortable with. But I would say to you, go check it now while they're in Pisces, and they're not right on your moon. Because the moon is also a career indicator for you, and moon's in the sixth house. So it's not unlikely, but with Saturn in your ninth, I'd say, I don't know that you're going to love it there. And then when we move you by location, in the region metropolitan, we move you by location and we make Uranus much tighter and the node much tighter. So it's not a huge shift for your chart to be down there. But you do take Saturn out of the eighth house, the ninth house, and put it in the eighth. So I would also validate that the work you're going to do is going to actually really pay what you thought it would. Not bad for an adventure, but I wouldn't sign a long-term contract, you know?
Right. And then how does Sparta look for me?
Sparta where?
New Jersey.
Well, Sparta, New Jersey is not that far from
New Brunswick.
New Brunswick, yeah. That's not going to, you know, what you find is a lot of times the east-west stuff does a bigger change than the north-south. So Sparta, your ascendant is 8. New Brunswick, your ascendant is 8. Your midheaven is 9 in New Brunswick. Your midheaven in Sparta is 9. So it's not a huge change. It's just a little shift to the side.
Okay.
You move to California, you get a whole different chart. And that you might actually like California better, because it helps, you know, your chart kind of ground a little bit and get some of those harder planets out of the first.
I see.
But you do have Saturn in the ninth, so it does kind of say, you know, it's not necessarily a great indicator. It can be like, okay, I can work overseas, but it isn't necessarily a great indicator for I'm going to have a great time when I do it.
I see.
It's more of like a slavery thing, or I'm going to work really hard and I'm not going to like it as much as I thought I would. That's why I would say go check it out, because you're really going to tighten up those Uranus-Pluto lines.
Okay.
Yeah. Make sense?
Yes. Oh. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good. All right. Okay. I have a couple people that are out there listening, but they didn't press the 1 to raise their hand, so I'm not going to call on them unless they press the 1 to raise. There we go. There's 401. Press. I love it when I say that and they press the number. Hi, 401. How are you?
Hi, Ian. I miss your column. I had to tell you that.
It's coming out. I'm going to do it. We're migrating. The blog looks nice, but it's not quite finished, so it's going to go up again. I'm an old computer girl, so you freeze everything. And then I had all that stuff to migrate, which I didn't realize how much I'd written. But it was actually nice. It was like, okay, working on this other thing. We'll do something else. So good to know you missed me. But
I do, and I always love listening to you. And I'm starting to get that be afraid. Listening to all the stuff, I have a tremendous amount of Scorpio planets. You've done my chart, and I have some not such easy placements. So job stuff, back again. Mm-hmm. I had a temp position. Mm-hmm. That ended. I'm like back not working, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting afraid.
Yeah, don't get afraid. That means Venus is saying, I don't think this is a job for you. I think we're going to revise your job and get you a new one. Remember, it's conjunctions. Conjunctions start things. That's a good thing.
Well, it's going to go back retrograde right over my ascendant is almost 13 degrees Scorpio.
Okay.
And my sun's in the 12th.
And so it's in your 12th house.
With conjuncting Neptune, 8 and 9 degrees.
Okay. So that's the dissolving the past. And then it's going to go back into that 12th house. So it's going to say back into the underworld with you and then come back out again when Venus clears her shadow in December. So you got a month and a half, 2 months back into the underworld. But it's not a bad placement. It's like it gives you new beginnings in those places. Think of it as you thought there was a new beginning, but there's actually another one. And that one hasn't happened yet. So you just kind of have to go, okay, let me go along on the ride. You know, think of it as a ride. And they're going back and saying, well, let's start again. We didn't really like that. And it's not, you know, a lot of times Scorpio is intense, you know, and you have strong psychic stuff with that 12th house. So talk to your 12th house guide. Say, you know, when's it going to clear? When am I going to feel comfortable again? And you'll probably very quickly hear, you know, November, don't worry. We're revising things. Because a lot of times what this is, the other part of it is, think of it in the bigger picture of all the other planets moving. The Saturn and the Pluto are both answering to Venus and Scorpio, and they're trying to build structure, but they can't really build structure unless they firmly know what you're emotionally committed to. And that's why there's no fire, because there's no light. It's all about the emotions. What are you emotionally willing to commit to? If we have that answer, then we can build. And so until we get emotionally clear, and whenever we stir up the emotions, we have to give the dirt time to settle. Or the dust and the water time. You know, like when you walk through sand and you stir up the sand, you have to give it a little bit of time to settle. So Venus is retrograde saying, settle, settle. And then we'll come back through again and we'll see. And whenever we create anything, emotion is the step right before creation. So this is very, very fast-moving energy once it moves. But right now we're kind of in the swamp. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, you know, yeah. But the one woman was the making money, and I have a afflicted Saturn in the second house, and I'm thinking, wow,
well, he's down
I don't
in,
like...
Well, but he's in Sag or Capricorn, right?
He's in Capricorn, and it's in a T-square with my Aries moon and my Mars in Cancer, and I'm thinking, okay, so am I going to be poor the rest of my life? More I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, okay, I'm not liking this at all.
Well, why are you going to give it a negative connotation? With Saturn in the second, you have karmic issues around learning to value yourself. Right?
Okay,
that's
true.
That's what Saturn in the second says, that my father didn't value me the way I wanted him to. And I got mad at him, Moon and Aries, and I couldn't really be mad at him, Mars and Cancer, because he wouldn't love me. So now I have to figure out how to value myself. And when I do that, I've got that lovely Moon and Aries and the Mars and Cancer. And the Moon and the Mars are in mutual reception, so they can swap places.
Oh, and they do.
So they can dig you into a hole, or they can get you out of any hole you're ever dug into.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, you got to kind of think of them as, but they do have their negative behaviors. We'll give them that every, you know, but they can swap. And Saturn in Capricorn says you're here to learn karmically about your value. So every day you sit up and you go, I value myself. And the way I'm going to show myself I value myself today is to do bup, 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 whatever that is, Saturn in Capricorn, something around work, something around structure, something about supporting yourself, something about building a foundation for yourself, even if it's, you know, putting $5 away a day, whatever, or, you know, building, you know, whatever the Saturn story is, because he rules your mind too. So it's, you know, positive affirmations really work with your chart. But it also is giving yourself permission to value yourself. And Capricorn Saturn, a lot of people have that Or Saturn in the second have pots of money. They're afraid of it, but they have it. Because sometimes if you get all the money, then you're afraid people are only going to love you for the money, you know. So that's a whole other host of problems. But say, I'm willing now to trade my problems for a new set. You know, give me the problem of having too much and people loving me for my money and not me. But I say, go for it. You know, and it's not a, don't sit in the fear. Just kind of say, okay, and with Pluto coming through there, he's going to alter all your beliefs about yourself anyway.
Yeah, well, he's already gone over my Jupiter's at one cap.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I asked you an email, and I know you've been so busy, if you ever considered doing webinar, because I really would like, I'm working on the astrology. And I learned
I have,
so
actually,
much.
That's on the list that, that Ellen and I, my webmistress and I have talked about. So it's on the pile. It's in
okay.
the process, but it hasn't happened yet. But yes, it's, you know, as a possible. But I don't know that, well, it's, I have to try it. I've been fiddling around with a new thing, gotomeeting.com, and letting people see their charts when I read them. And that's been going very well. And they have a webinar function, and there's other people I know that do it. So it's just on the list, but I haven't gotten to it yet. But we're in process, so we'll work, keep working. But you want the webinars, so we'll...
I would love it because, I mean, I would love to go to New York, but it's, you know, 3 hours trip
yeah.
is a little bit, you know,
yeah.
much. And I just did one with Amy, what's her last name? She did a progressed one.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked really well, too, the webinar.
Okay.
So,
right. well,
and I do Marilyn Mazzano, who I think you know.
Mm-hmm.
She does Pal Talk. She does a voice room, just a class every Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
And,
I'll check it out.
So those are just options, you know, that
yeah.
I wanted to
yeah, yeah, yeah.
tell you. So I said, all right, I gotta press one so I can tell you the things that I've been dying to tell you. So, but thank you so much. I'm trying not to get fearful, but it's really hard when the job stuff and the money, and it's like, okay, this world around us isn't looking too good.
No, so. But that's the world around us. That's not your world.
Okay.
That's to be afraid, be very afraid. And it's like, no. Let's
well, that's why I said, okay, Anne, it's starting to work. I'm starting to get afraid.
Starting to get afraid. You're making me afraid. Well, the Stephen Colbert guy is doing a thing called Keep Fear Alive, you know, and it's like, yeah, keep the fear alive. Keep it alive. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Let it go. Who needs the fear? All right, well, the little British lady talks, so I have to let go. But off we go. So have a good week, okay?
All right. Thanks so much, Anne.
Right,
take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. All right, so that's the Anne Ortley Weekly Weather Show, and feel free to call or email. I don't always get to the emails, but I do eventually get to them. Have a great week. Watch for the new moon. Remember to sit down on Thursday and give yourself some new visions and new intentions of where you'd like to go in the next 2.5 years. Take care and be well. Bye.